In politics, there are those who live in the spotlight, and then they are the real backroom boys in political circles. The ones who roll up their sleeves, work the strategy rooms, and quietly shape the direction the country takes. He's navigated some of India's most complex regions and examines and interprets the forces reshaping the world. You are at the forefront of foreign policy thinking in the BJP. What is your idea of foreign policy? We assumed foreign policy would always remain a matter of consensus, a national consensus. Do you still see that as a feasible, viable idea of foreign policy, or is this something quite different now?
I totally agree with you on that very fundamental premise that at one level, foreign policy should remain a continuum. I mean, there should be broader consensus on certain principles. I think even under Prime Minister Modi, that basic premise has never been rejected or violated, I assume. As a student of foreign international relations and all, also I have a firm conviction that foreign policy should not be subject to domestic party politics. It should be at some level, some continuum, but every leader adds his or her own flavor to it. The present leadership, I think, the major, important, significant contribution or addition that has been made to India's foreign policy outlook is what we call generally as strategic autonomy or multi-alignment, whichever way we would like to put it. I think those nuances apart, our foreign policy basic principles remain the same. We are committed to democratic form of government. We are more comfortable dealing with democracies. We respect national sovereignties across the world. We don't support wars. We don't get involved in wars. Those principles, irrespective of the parties, we followed right from the beginning, and we stick to those principles.
Let me bring you back to an important area on which you've spoken a great deal, which is Indo-Pacific. And that was in the context of collaboration, cooperation between the United States and India for the Indo-Pacific for a variety of reasons. Now, and therefore, when we talk about Indo-Pacific, we are talking about Quad. Now, does anything change? Is there something on need for a pause while we are reassessing or realigning our relationship with the United States?
Sir, on Indo-Pacific, our view as a country, and probably the view of the USA has a nuanced difference. It's not exactly the same as how we look at Indo-Pacific. For us, Indo-Pacific is the most significant, most happening region of the world today, because almost 70 to 80% of the container trade passes through it, 80% of the energy trade passes through it. World's largest economies, fastest growing economies are situated here. Biggest armies are situated here. So this region is what Pacific Atlantic was in the last century. So global power axis is situated here. We are in that region, so it is important for us. So what we always said was that for us to maintain peace in the region, freedom of navigation in the region is very important. But probably US has seen it as a strategic region. For them, containing China in this region has been one of the paramount objectives when they talk about Indo-Pacific as a region. So that's why about Indo-Pacific, the US always talked about FOIP, Free and Open Indo-Pacific, FOIP, Free and Open Indo-Pacific. But we always said it's not just free and open, free, open and inclusive Indo-Pacific. We added one more I to it. So countries like Russia, countries like China have always had certain suspicion about this whole Quad arrangement. We used to reassure them that as far as India is concerned, Quad is not about containing any country or excluding anybody. It's about maintaining this most happening region peacefully, in that everybody has stakes.
I think that that cuts our task out for BRICS that is to meet now in the BRICS summit to take place in India. Is there something on the horizon now that we need to look at afresh in as far as the BRICS are concerned, or even Russia, India, China, triumvirate, etc.? Is there a need to relook at some of those?
You know very well, BRICS is considered a very important coalition in the world today. One of the important plurilaterals, one would call it, because it is no longer a minilateral now. It's already 11 members and another 30 are waiting to join. So an important plurilateral arrangement. But as far as we are concerned, the stand or the view we took on Indo-Pacific is this view we take on BRICS also. BRICS, no doubt, is an important plurilateral arrangement for us. It has an important role to play as the voice of the global south, I would say, non-Western world. BRICS, that way, is a very important forum. As I said, BRICS, incidentally, is one group where not so much of Western influence is there. So the non-Western world, it has certain views, certain world views, certain values, certain views to convey. BRICS can be the best platform to articulate the non-Western viewpoint before the Western world.
In that context, if we zoom in now for a relationship with our neighbor, our northern neighbor, China, which is something that you have watched very carefully, something on which your party and our party has at least had some differences, which we are still waiting to sort out and to discuss in greater detail. But since we have a chance to see if that conversation can be taken forward, let me just touch you on China. Where do we stand on China today?
I don't think on the basic question of India-China dispute, even Congress and BJP have any fundamental differences on the main issue of the dispute. The dispute about the long 4,000 kilometer border. Border disputes create gaps in the relationship, but on some other areas, our relationship continued to grow. Today, it is a $140 billion trade relationship between us. Today's concern is, besides the border, how to balance the trade.
Balance the trade, that's right.
The imbalance is a challenge. So on that, I think as a country, there should be a bipartisan consensus in this, that we should try and negotiate with China in such a manner that our trade imbalance is reduced. But with China, the biggest challenge I see is in the region. It's not just a bilateral challenge, it's a regional challenge. Because we too are situated in the same geographical region. We too have same interests in the region. We too have same friends. So each country wants to have stronger ties with a given country. There is bound to be some competition. We see that competition happening in our neighborhood. We see that competition happening in our extended neighborhood, namely ASEAN and the Indian Ocean region. There, the challenge for India will be, or for that matter, for China also will be. There will be competition, that is understood. We are two rising powers, will compete for the same space, but How can we ensure that it doesn't become a conflict?
If we come closer home, if we get into our neighborhood, we've talked about China, we've talked about the influence China wishes to impose in our neighborhood region, etc. And there is trouble in our neighborhood. And it seems suddenly the trouble in our neighborhood is trying to exact the price from us. We've suffered for our neighborhood. It's would be wrong to say that the neighborhood is served us and we've not served the neighborhood. I mean, Bangladesh, Nepal, Sri Lanka, how much we've done for our neighborhood. And why does it seem suddenly that the neighborhood is turning against us?
We have had difficulties with the neighborhood occasionally. So if we think that this is the first time that it's happening, I beg to disagree.
No.
Our neighborhood sometimes poses challenges.
Not first time. Yes. I'm just saying, looking
today
forward to where we are today.
Yes.
And what could have contributed to where we stand today? This is very critical.
Of course. I agree with you. We always upheld the principle of neighborhood first. This is a policy we borrowed from your governments past governments. But we also added the dimension that together we grow. When India grows, its benefits should accrue to them. But when they grow, they should keep in mind that should help India also. That becomes critical because, as you rightly pointed out, today China is a big player in this region. In their effort to grow, in their friendship with China, they should not create any problems to India. That is the expectation that we have from our neighborhood. It looks a little difficult right now in countries like Bangladesh, I agree. But otherwise, neighborhood, Pakistan has been a challenge from the beginning. But otherwise, today we have fairly good relations with our neighborhood. And we appreciate the sovereign, right of those countries to have engagement or have relationship with any other country.
We have this very important visit of President Putin to India, which consolidates, which refreshes a long historical relationship with Russia. Was there a special feel about this particular summit at this particular moment? Were the events in the world unfolding in a manner which gave greater importance to this particular summit, which otherwise could have been just a routine summit between India and Russia, etc.? How do you see it?
A summit level engagement between leaders of India and Russia can never be called a routine thing, because these are two very important powers.
Sure.
And the relationship is also a very deep relationship. And we have invested for decades over this relationship. We always held this relationship to be a very important relationship that India has. Just as we have very good relationship with the USA, which has grown over the last 20 to 25 years. But the relationship with Russia is much older. We began ties right from the time after our independence, and it has gone stronger
and
stronger.
And deeper.
Deeper.
Yeah.
So we respect this relationship, and obviously our two leaders, whether they meet in India or in Moscow, or they meet in China or somewhere on the sidelines of something, it is always a very important meeting.
This is no signaling to the US.
If it is to be a signal, that signal has been given long ago. At the time, we clearly said we won't take sides on the Ukraine issue.
Right.
That time itself, we gave those signals. There is no reason for us to believe that what the US or Europe thinks, the whole world should also think on the same lines.
Right.
That is somehow the problem with the thinking of our Western friends. They assume that what they believe should be the belief of the rest of the world. It doesn't work that way.
While the hot potato is Iran and Israel, now they are at loggerheads, and we know that the United States of America is threatening to intervene and so on. Now, that's where we have good relations with two countries and very clearly relations that have stood the test of time. What are we going to do when this happens? Do we have a role in stepping in to say, please hold back, please don't escalate further so that countries like India can play a role, etc.? What is it that we want to do?
Iran issue is a much more complex issue, I believe. In fact, more complex than the other conflicts that are happening at the moment. More complex than even Ukraine and Gaza, because there is a long-standing and much more serious issue of nuclearization of that country, and all those issues are involved. What will happen, whether the US will initiate military action in Iran? We have to wait and see. We sincerely hope that things won't reach that situation. We have had certain multilateral efforts to resolve that issue. You know very well that officers from United Nations affiliated bodies visited Iran, inspected all their all their facilities. They had submitted their reports to the UN and other bodies. Another matter, one may agree, one may not agree with those conclusions of those bodies. But we have to, I think, follow that route only, a route that is multilateral in nature and acceptable to all governments.
This is happening. And, I can recall from my time that Iran has been very candid and open with India. It cherishes its relationship with India. It wants to take it forward. India has tried in its own way. Whenever there have been sanctions, whenever there have been proscriptions, India has tried its maximum to try and help Iran, etc. But if it becomes Iran versus US, there'll be a problem. Meanwhile, what about an axis that's emerging in West Asia? Saudi, Turkey, Pakistan. Now, what is our position on this? This is worrisome. This is troubling.
What is happening in the Middle East in general, if you talk about this Pakistan, Saudi, Turkey new axis that has been created, and added to it is the Iran situation. Added to it are the growing tensions between UAE and the Saudis. It is creating a very volatile situation in the Middle East. Middle East is always a very volatile region. Now, the kind of developments that are taking place are certainly not really very good. But as far as India is concerned, our interests are tied with different countries. Like, you know, Saudis are an important partner and friend for India. So are the Emiratis. I think for India, I don't see an immediate role to play in that. I mean, obviously, you should not try to catch the tail of a tiger, which you can never leave tomorrow. Let us only hope that the situation stabilizes a little bit. Right now, it is definitely, I agree with you totally, a little cause of concern.
But when you look at Europe and the United States of America, you've looked at the United States in many ways for quite a long time. How is it that Europe today opens up a front against Russia? It opens up a front against the United States, or United States opens a front against Europe? Where does the European leadership find itself? I mean, are they going to choose between the two? Are they just going to be completely alienated from both sides? And if that happens, where do we place ourselves? I mean, you know that we've had difficult moments with Ukraine and Russia. We've had different moments with what President Trump has done in the Middle East. So where do we stand vis-a-vis Europe while this thing is underway?
As far as India is concerned, for us, Europe is an important market. Unlike the relationship between USA and Europe, USA and Europe, their relationship, which we call as transatlantic relationship, is not merely a market-based relationship. It goes beyond that. They have something called NATO. They have a common security arrangement, which puts some responsibility on Europe also and also US also to ensure security of each country. So there, for them, issues like Ukraine become very important. They become defining in terms of their relationship with the USA. They are facing a lot of problems today. We have seen what happened very recently at the Davos summit, how leader after leader from Europe came out and spoke openly against the kind of treatment they are being meted out by the US, and the president of US was there to pay them back in his own way. So there is definitely a growing tension between the two regions. India's relationship with Europe is not necessarily geopolitical or geostrategic. It is more importantly geoeconomic. That relationship will continue.
Do you have a sense that there is, and if not is, there will be a rethink in Europe how to deal with Russia?
Obviously, I can't predict whether there will be a rethink, but if you ask me whether it should be, there should be a rethink, I would say yes. The Ukraine issue could have been handled differently by Europe especially. I would say one of the principal players in taking situation in Ukraine to this level was the then Prime Minister of UK also. He played a critical role in encouraging the Ukrainian leadership to go for war and all that. They could have at that time thought about the consequences of a conflict there, because it's essentially a European conflict. As European nations, they could have thought about it independent of the US influence, independent of influence from UK and other countries. As a European Union, they could have thought about it and played a probably different role, which they did not do at that time.
How do we finally get the right position as far as Gaza and Palestine is concerned? Because we have a special relationship with Israel as well. We've had a very special relationship with Iran, a civilizational relationship, if you like, with Iran. And there has been no indication that we want to move away from it. But there are some major challenges coming, as you would be aware. So how do we figure out all this, and how do we find ourselves in it?
On Palestine, we had very clear view or position. We always supported two-state solution and a decent life for the people of Palestine is also our commitment. To that extent, whatever happened in Gaza, Prime Minister himself said it on the floor of the house also, it's very unfortunate. The amount of destruction and distress caused to the civilian populations in Gaza. So any effort to restore good life there in that part of the country, Palestine or Israel, is always definitely most welcome for India. But
The problem with this development group that President Trump wants to create is nobody is clear about its structure. You know, President Trump will be the chairman of that group, and he will be there even after he demits office. What does it mean? I mean, does it mean it is his private enterprise?
Now go back on a larger frame. I'm going to remind you of the very important word that you've used in your book, New World, 21st Century. I think you have it here, the new word. Heteropolar world. So when you speak of the heteropolar world, do you see that as a replacement for the world order, which seems to be collapsing?
Sir, I am reminded of Antonio Gramsci.
Yeah.
In 1930.
Right.
He said something interesting. The old order is dead. He was talking about 1930s when things were changing drastically. The old order is dead. The new is yet to be born. This interim is the time for monsters. So I'm not calling any leader a monster, any individual, but I'm seeing such monstrous forces all over,
right,
playing a very, very big role. For example, today, I would say big tech corporations have become so very important. If you see the Ukraine-Russia conflict, in that, with Ukraine, it's not just NATO which stood by Ukraine. It's also Starlink. Today, if Hungary is fighting against certain liberal forces in Europe or elsewhere, Hungary's challenge is not just from the states. It's also from George Soros in America, one investor. So those forces are what I'm calling today as heteropolar forces. They are not under anybody's control. You can't control them through your multilateral institutions because your multilateral institutions have become very weak and dysfunctional. Where is WTO today? Is it? It doesn't have a dispute redressal mechanism for the last 6 years, sir. They don't. America is not allowing appointment of commissioners, so there is no dispute redressal mechanism there. UN is not able to function. What happened in Venezuela? We have seen it is a failure of multilateralism. That one country simply goes and, if I were to use the word kidnap, he simply picks up the president of another country from his house and brings him and puts him in its jails. I mean, something which is very disorderly is what is happening in the world today. There, the forces that are operating are what I called as heteropolar forces. They are not necessarily states alone.
Are we in a position to speak our mind clearly? Is the world too noisy for India to be able to say what it really deserves to say and what it believes that it should say? Are we going to be lost somewhere in that noise?
This is that phase of transition. We are entering into a new order. That new order should not be allowed to become unipolar or bipolar. It has to remain multipolar. That's what we have been saying. Let the voices of different groups be given respect, given enough space in whatever kind of new arrangement we make. That kind of a world order, which we are very strongly committed to, a multipolar order, where there is order, but there are multiple poles.
Your colleague, Mr. Vaishnav, had spoken at Davos about India's contribution to artificial intelligence. Do you think that there is something that could be expanded on that?
The observation of the Secretary General of WTO there about India being a second-rank country when it comes to AI was a little uncharitable, I would say, because in the last almost 10 to 15 years, the kind of giant strides that India has made in all the different deep tech areas, not just AI alone. We are progressing very well in semiconductors area. In artificial intelligence, largest pool of technical manpower exists in India. AI research for almost all the major companies in the world happens in India. All modeling is done in India. So India is actually doing tremendous giant strides in all these areas. Ashwini highlighted the fact that whatever rank you want to give, you give. That is just not easy material to us. But India is no less important in this AI ecosystem today than any other country in terms of the kind of progress it has made already, in terms of the size of our manpower, in terms of our IT, deep IT infrastructure, huge infrastructure that we have had in our country.
Question that often arises, is about how the global media treats us, often described as Western media. When I went on the multi-party delegation sent after Operation Sindoor, many countries that we went to said that their people were being informed and their perceptions were being created by the Western media, and that there wasn't enough done by India to counter that. How would you react to this?
Oh, sadly, the story with the Western media is that they have always been very biased against India. This has been the case not just in the recent past. This has been the case for many, many decades now. There is some sense of superiority in the Western media. You know, they assume that role of global media, global conscience keepers, global opinion makers. Although the reality today is many other forces in the media are rising. They are also rising as important media voices. For example, RT is an important voice. There are voices in China. There are voices in Middle East. Somehow there is constant effort to run down India, show India in bad light. If they don't like India taking an independent position on Ukraine, they will heap a lot of insults, humiliations on India. That has been the trend. And they should, first of all, stop giving certificates of quality or certificates of performance to other countries. India is too big a country, a successful democracy. They question our democracy also.
But you know, the thing is, when I met with the Chinese delegation that was here recently and met with your party as well, I assured them that there is a noise of Indian democracy that has to be understood in a place like China where perhaps there isn't a similar noise, but it's a different system, it's a different structure, etc. We have a noisy democracy. And in the noisy democracy, things are said and done and suggested, etc., which should not be taken as criticism of some other friend somewhere else in the world. So let's hope we read the right messages about what they do and that they read the right messages about what we do. And perhaps this conversation that we've had will lead others to have similar conversations and lead to a better future. Thank you very much, Ram Madhavji.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful. You.